Good evening. I'm Karen Ashby, your moderator for tonight's telephone town hall. I welcome you to this live event and would like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Art Haywood of the 4th Senate District will take your calls as he discusses the immediate SNAP work requirements. Senator Haywood will be joined by the inclusive economy policy analyst from the Center for America Progress, Kyle Ross. As a reminder, if you have any questions or would like to join in on the conversation, please just press star 3 on your keypad at any time during this call. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you very much, Karen. Good evening to everyone. This is State Senator Art Haywood. Welcome to our telephone town hall for all my friends and neighbors within the 4th Senate District. I would like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedules to participate on this call. Now, whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. So if you would like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 3. Yes, star 3 on your phone. Now, as Karen said, this evening we will be discussing the immediate SNAP work requirements. Immediate means this. For those who are 19 to 64 and receiving SNAP benefits for food, in most situations, you will be required to work 80 hours a month to continue to receive SNAP food assistance. This begins August the 1st. Yes, August the 1st, in a few days. Now, to help me discuss these new requirements that begin August the 1st to keep or get SNAP food assistance, I welcome inclusive economy policy analyst from the Center for American Progress, a national think tank that looks into all of these issues, Kyle Ross. Kyle, please share something about what you are doing and give everyone who's listening an up-to-date scenario for these SNAP food assistance work requirements. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, thank you so much for having me on, Senator Haywood. My name is Kyle Ross. I am with the Center for American Progress, located in Washington, D.C., basically a policy researcher. Our organization focuses on a wide variety of issues. Me specifically, I specialize in issues related to anti-poverty programs. For the last many months, particularly this year, that meant has really for me, that has meant dialing in on SNAP and potential changes to SNAP, or colloquially called food stamps, food assistance. This is because the entirety of 2025 up to this point, at least for me, has really centered around one ginormous tax and spending package that recently made its way through Congress and was signed by the president earlier this month. In addition to enacting and re-proposing a bunch of tax cuts and a bunch of different policy on the tax side, what it importantly also does, and I really want to stress here, that this enacts the largest cuts to SNAP food assistance in the program's history. By far, it is not close. It does this in a wide variety of ways. We'll be focusing in on one of the major provisions here tonight, which is something that a lot of folks can actually have some control over. A lot of the cuts will go into effect, and the powers that be will, you know, kind of dictate how benefits look for a lot of people. But at least with this provision, there are some things that folks can do to try to protect their benefits, make sure that they're not as harmed as much as they otherwise could be, and trying to spread awareness of that. And that is, as the Senator mentioned, expansions, historic expansions to the program's work requirements. I sometimes call them paperwork requirements, and you can get into the fun little reasons for that later on. But essentially, this requires folks that are applying for SNAP or SNAP recipients to have to demonstrate that they are working 80 hours a month, 20 hours a week, consistently in order to keep their benefits. If they are unable to, they are given a few months leeway, but after that, if you're not able to consistently prove the sufficient numbers of employment, the sufficient hours worked, you will lose benefits. For upwards of 3 years, since SNAP is the number one sort of food program for helping people afford groceries, combating food insecurity, this is honestly devastating, and it will impact many people. The expansions in particular, I'll note that this is already in place for many people. Many of you probably have heard of these requirements before, but what really makes this particularly dangerous and historic is that it's being expanded to new groups of people for the first time. So in particular, folks that are ages 55 to 64 previously never had to worry about these before. These are folks, you know, that are possibly nearing retirement. They may want to start decreasing their hours or stepping away from the labor market. Unfortunately, this bill or this law now will require folks in those age range, in that age range, to demonstrate that they are working enough. The same is true for families with children. For the first time in the program's history, now we are forcing families with children, as young as 14 and above to demonstrate that consistently that they are working enough to keep their SNAP benefits. Separately, there are special protected groups of people that were identified just 2 years ago in a bipartisan bill in Congress that exempted these groups from having to comply with these work requirements. These groups were veterans, people experiencing homelessness, and former foster youth. Those folks were, just 2 years ago, exempted from these requirements. This law that just passed would undo that bipartisan agreement and once again force those groups to have to comply. Now, when I say comply, what does that really mean? States can interpret that in a wide variety of ways, but essentially, what I would encourage folks who are scared they'll have to comply, or know they'll have to comply, or just want to be on the safe side to do, if you have a job currently, if you are employed, I would strongly encourage you to keep track of your pay stubs. Track them down, collect them, download them. If you get them physical copies, keep them in a, you know, safety deposit box somewhere. Keep them locked up safe. Each one, all of them, for the time being, I would start collecting those. And that is a really reliable source of proving how many hours you worked. Not always, but it can be really helpful for demonstrating the amount that you are working. And so that can serve as a really good, useful piece of evidence for meeting this requirement. So each time you have to recertify or meet with a case manager, or even if you're applying for the first time, I would take those pay stubs with you during each and any of those interactions from now on going forward, unless you hear otherwise from your case manager. That is, I think, the number one piece of advice that I'll share now, and I'll make sure to probably repeat it a couple of times as folks kind of hop in and out of the call.
Hey, Senator, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that. Thanks, Karen. Let's go to some callers.
All righty. So we're going to go live with our first caller. Our first caller is Brianna. Brianna, you're live.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Brianna. Go ahead.
How you doing? My name is Brianna Smith, and I live in Philadelphia. I just wanted to know if these SNAP cuts would affect those who are receiving disability benefits.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. This bill does not explicitly cut benefits for people receiving disability benefits. That said, I will say SNAP in particular, or really the safety net system broadly, has a history of being really hard to convince when it comes to showcasing that people have disabilities. So people with disabilities are often, you know, exempt from these requirements, but saying that you have a disability is often, unfortunately, not enough, and there is quite a process in order to, quote-unquote, prove that you have a disability. Now, if you are already receiving benefits, that is a great surefire sign that the agency would believe you when you say that you have a disability and you should be exempt. That is great. Unfortunately, not all folks with disabilities receive benefits for having one. And we know it can be a really long, arduous, complicated process in order to get disability benefits. So what that means is that not all people with disabilities will end up being exempt because they're not able to sufficiently prove it in the eyes of the agency. And that's something to really keep an eye out for. And it's if you are concerned about that, I would highly suggest making sure that you are in the best possible position to convince the agency of your condition. Oftentimes, that ends up being you getting benefits from a disability program, SSI, SSDI. Those programs often are a great way to recognize the fact in the eyes of the government that you would be exempt from these requirements.
Okay. So, Brianna, short answer. Disabled do not have to do the work requirements. Do not have to do the work requirements, though you may have, but you got to prove it. All right. Let's get another call.
All right. Just a quick reminder for our participants in this live event. If you would like to join in on the conversation and ask Kyle or Senator Haywood a question, please just press *3 at any point during the call. Senator, we had an online question submitted by Tanya, and she asked, I'm 62, I've been dealing with some health issues, and I live on a fixed income. I rely on SNAP to get by, and I'm worried these new rules might cut me off. are seniors like me going to lose benefits because we can't meet these new work requirements?
Kyle.
Yeah, so 62, if I heard that correctly, unfortunately, that falls within the new expanded range. The expanded range would end once folks reach 65, essentially. So if you are, you know, on a fixed income, you're not really able to demonstrate that, like, that you are working consistently or only, can only work occasionally, I would be concerned that, that these new requirements, once they go into effect, may harm you. So if you do receive any sort of employment, any and all sources of income that you received, either if it's from government benefits or if it's from employment, any sort of employment, to collect that and inquire with your case manager about what information you would need in order to stay compliant. And I'll flag again that there are a couple of months of leeway here. It's not much, but it's something to take advantage of when you're trying to figure out your next steps, essentially. You get 3 months of being able to be not compliant without getting kicked off your benefits. And if you're able to figure something out and change your situation in order to find a way to stay eligible before those 3 months are up, then your benefits will not be interrupted. So I would use that time to really coordinate with your case manager to see and pursue any possible avenue.
That's right. Now, Tanya, let me tell you, my short answer is yes. These work requirements apply to you. Yes. Unless you can demonstrate that you're disabled and you are 62 years old, you are in the category of those who have to show work. Now, you've got in a few things that count as work, I understand. Obviously, work, the pay stuff, school, volunteering, job training. Some of those activities will count as work, but this law puts you into it. Okay, next caller, please.
All righty, we're going to go live with Gianna. Gianna, you are live.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gianna, and I was actually wondering if either Senator Hayward or Kyle had any information about the SNAP Ed program, which is the education component of the SNAP program, that was completely eliminated.
So I talked to the DA, our health secretary, earlier today, and you are right, the program has been completely eliminated. It was $29 million coming to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It's gone from 29 to zero. So therefore, that's the end of that program.
All righty, are we ready for the next caller?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go live with Loretta. Loretta, you are live.
Hello. My name's Loretta, and I'm from Philadelphia. And I want to know, how are all of these verifications going to be facilitated? Right now, the welfare offices are inundated with a lot of paperwork, where they don't have the staffing to address it. My daughter has been applying for food stamps since January. She works, and every time she goes there, they can't find her paperwork or whatever. And so she has not been able to receive any type of benefit up to this point. And so it's a lot of requirements, but how is all of this going to be facilitated so that the benefits can get to the people if they are indeed eligible?
Let me respond to that, Kyle. So, at least from a Pennsylvania perspective, we talked to the health secretary about, the DHS secretary about this today. What she said is she would need to hire 200 people, and it would take a year to train them. But the the legislature is not going to give her the money to hire 200 people. So they're going to try to use more technology to try to get people who are eligible, get them on. But this is a tremendous, tremendous challenge. And this law came from Republicans and the president, intended to create so much paperwork that folks would be knocked off. Intended to create so much paperwork that people would be knocked off or would not be able to receive assistance. So there's great awareness of what you're describing. But how ready we are is to be determined. This is why, however, we have this telephone town hall tonight. So folks can know to begin to get their pay stuff together, get their school stuff together, volunteering together, job training together, to be able to comply the best we can. But you are right. This is going to be a tremendous challenge for the state and the community. Tyler, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, that there's a real a separate but also really concerning piece in the new law itself that would unfortunately only exacerbate the problems that were highlighted in terms of administration, which is to say that basically the federal government will be starting to shift significantly more costs, SNAP costs, both benefit costs, the actual benefits that people get, and administrative costs, which go to things like hiring new people and training new people and implementing new technology. A lot more of those costs will start falling on the states in the years to come. So as bad as things are now, the intent definitely is not only to push people off through more paperwork, but also overloading states and state budgets to force cuts, unfortunately. We're not sure. No one knows what that exactly is going to look like yet. It will probably look like a wide variety of things, but states can expect significantly more budgetary pressure in the near term, and that will make things like hiring new people to figure out how to administer all these new paperwork requirements that much more harder.
All right, quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or join in on the conversation, just press *3 on your keypad at any moment during this live event. We are going to now go live to Catherine. Catherine, you are live.
Okay, so good evening. Thank you for this town hall. I just have a question about people who are self-employed, or just to confirm that training, volunteering, and other activities would be counted?
Yes. Any of those categories, yeah. If you're self-employed, that absolutely will still count. Volunteering, like the senator said earlier, work programs, yeah, any of those will count towards those hours, yes.
Now, I will say that documenting some of those hours will be more challenging than pay stubs. So it will take significant effort to demonstrate that those hours have been worked, probably in a way different than just gathering pay stubs that are provided by the employer. So significant work there to demonstrate the activity.
All righty, ready for the next caller, Senator? All righty, we're going to go live with Barbara. Barbara, you're live.
Hi, my name is Barbara, and I'm 85 years old. I'm on Social Security, and I'm do get a SNAP. I was wondering when I'd be affected when I lose my SNAP?
No, you will not. This does not apply to anybody over 65, and you are 85. Congratulations, but this will not affect you directly. Now, let me say this. I'm not sure exactly where you live, but there are some grocery stores, like the one, the Save-A-Lot, at Washington Lane at Cute. And I talked to the manager. He says that 80% of his customers rely on SNAP. So if a number of people lose their benefits and are no longer shoppers at his store, then his store could close. So even though you would still be getting your SNAP assistance because you're 85, some of the stores where you shop may close, which may make getting groceries more challenging.
All righty, Senator. Our next caller is Carolyn. Carolyn, you are live.
Thank you. My name is Carolyn, and I live in Philadelphia. My question has to do with grandparents who have the care of minor children because parents' whereabouts are either unknown or have been medically verified that they are unable to care for these minor children. How will that affect their SNAP?
What do we know?
So this is going to vary case-on-case basis depending on the age of everybody in the household. For instance, if the grandparents are younger than 65, then they would have to comply with the work requirements, and if they cannot, then they are at risk of losing their benefits. But similarly, if the grandchildren are older or are 14 years of age or older, that would also make them subject to the work requirement. If they're younger than that, then the family will be exempt until they age into being 14 or older.
That's it. That's the new requirement for those who are taking care of teenagers. It's a crime. All right, let's go to the next caller.
Our next caller is Michelle. Michelle, you are live.
Hi, so I was recently laid off, as of yesterday.
Sorry to hear that.
And thank you. And I have a son that's about to be 8. So if I applied for benefits, what would be the grace period that they would allow before I have to re-enter the workforce?
I'm also sorry to hear about being laid off. What I can say, at least if it's some small comfort, is that since your child is 8, you should still be exempt from this new expanded work requirement. So even though you were laid off, you can find some small comfort in that your benefits will not be at risk of being taken away from you while you are taking the time to look for a new job and start that job and start collecting pay stubs and everything. So you should not be at risk in this case.
Now, if you've got, you got 6 more years until the child gets 14?
Right.
Okay. That's the new rule. The old rule was minors under 18. The new rule is only those under 14. This is all a result of the President and Senate and House Republicans in Washington, D.C. Let's go to our next caller, please.
Before we go to the next caller, just a quick reminder, anyone wants to join in on the conversation or ask a question, please just press star 3 on your keypad at any time. Senator, our next caller is Tracy. Tracy, are you there?
Oh, yes. Okay. Hello, everyone. Good evening. And sorry to have this event like it is. I'm calling in regard to someone who has been disabled from their employment, and they are receiving short-term disability and receiving the benefits. She was worried before this, while she was working, that, things like this would happen. But short-term and long-term disability from employment, is that included at this time? And
that's a great question.
7-year-old?
7-year-old who's got short-term disability? Okay, wait for it, Kyle.
The IT is on disability, short-term disability, taking care of like a 12, 13-year-old young lady.
Now, she's taking care, the auntie is taking care of the child. Where are the parents of the child?
Wow.
What do you think, Kyle? That sounds pretty complicated.
Yeah, so if it's a short-term employment-related disability, that is definitely a more difficult case, I would warn, in terms of making a case to a state agency. What typically classifies as a disabled person, quote unquote, is someone who is receiving federal or state benefits for a longer term ailment. If this is a short term impairment, it's not clear that that will be as effective in being able to prove that this person is disabled and should therefore be exempt from the requirement. If they are taking care of a young child still, though, you said 11, 12, 13, in that case, that would still make them exempt until the child turns 14, at least. So not saying no, you know, the disabled exemption won't work at all. I do believe there's some flexibility with how states can interpret that. But if that child is in the home and they're taking care of them, then that would automatically make you exempt until that child turns 14.
Thank you, Kyle. I do want to share that these answers we're providing tonight are intended to provide guidance. We are not the Department of Health, Human Services. We are not. And so for a final answer, the final answers on these questions would need to come from the Department of Human Services, County Assistance Office. So we don't want you completely relying upon all that we are saying, particularly in these cases that are a little bit complicated. Kyle, this would be a good time for you to go over briefly who is affected by the work requirements and to hit that again.
Absolutely. So the major categories, the new categories of people that are being affected by this are folks on the older side, ages 55 to 64 are newly subject to these work requirements, as well as families with children for the first time who are as young as 14 and older. separately. There are some particular groups that had a sort of protected status for the past couple of years, including veterans, people experiencing homelessness, and former foster youth that were previously exempt, but starting pretty much effective immediately, will once again no longer be exempt, and those folks will also have to start complying. One thing that I'll flag that is somewhat worrisome, not in the immediate near term, but something to take note of should the state of the economy shift, is that states before were often granted waivers from these requirements during times of really high unemployment. We're talking, you know, the COVID recession, the Great Recession, even outside of recession times, if part of the state is just doing really bad, a local factory shuts down and puts major portions of the workforce out of work. In times where there's just not enough jobs to go around, states could get a waiver from these requirements to say, to recognize that there's just not enough jobs to go around and people would not have to comply with these benefits because a lot of them would be kicked off through no fault of their own because there's no jobs anywhere. The new law that goes into effect effectively makes these waivers much, much harder to get. So just to note, in the future, whenever the next economic downturn comes, it will be a much scarier time for people who are laid off from their job and will have to rely on government services like SNAP, like Medicaid, like unemployment insurance. It'll be much harder for those folks to keep their benefits because they are not granted the leniency that they otherwise would have during times of high unemployment. So not going to affect things right now, not immediately, but should the economy shift, more people start getting laid off, those folks will have to still be compliant with work requirements, even if there's no jobs around.
Thanks for that update. Just want to share a few other updates. These requirements start August the 1st. And there will be the county assistance offices will start looking into this, whether people met the requirements or not, in September. Meet the work requirements in August, get checked in September. Department of Human Services has also said they're asking people to update their address so that they, when they send out information, you can get it, as well as you update your address on Compass. Please also do it with the post office so that they're aligned. Department of Human Services will be sending out information, but that's going to be later in August. We are trying to get it out today. We are getting this information out today before these work requirements begin August the 1st, 2025. This is because of the President and Republicans in the U.S. Congress. Let's take a few more calls, please.
All right, Senator, we're going to go live with Russell. Russell, you're live.
Hi, yes, this is more of a question. It's a general question / comment for the person from the Center for American Progress. So I was hearing you and Senator mention the need for people to make sure they stay on top of the pay stubs, that things of that nature. I was wondering if any think tanks or any policy groups such as Center for American Progress have been thinking about creating some sort of way to make that easy for folks, like a website or some sort of app, just so that it can people can easily, you know, put that information in one place so they have it at the ready. You know, a lot of people who are the recipients of SNAP benefits are, you know, caregivers working, you know, single mothers and fathers. So anything that can lower the barrier to entry, I imagine you know, would be very, very helpful. So I just wanted to put that out there if those conversations are already happening.
So I'm not sure about the national level. Go ahead. What do you know, Kyle?
Oh, no, I appreciate the thinking that we can create and that. I think that's definitely beyond our capabilities as a nonprofit. But one thing, flag, I definitely do want to highlight that point that you made about collecting, organizing pay stubs. Definitely 100% support any ways to make that easier, because that will make the process easier for everyone. The thing that I'll, you know, kind of have in mind in that is that just not only having internet access, but also the internet literacy needed to navigate an application or a portal to upload any documents can be, you know, somewhat cumbersome in and of itself, I'll admit. And while I definitely appreciate the intention to make things easier, I can envision a world where requiring people to download a separate app will, you know, be hard. It'll just be hard for a lot of people to really understand, and let alone having to navigate like kind of a whole new system. So it can be useful. Definitely won't, you know, discredit the idea, or say that it won't be helpful for anyone. But I think for a lot of folks that are most likely to experience the strongest barriers, internet access and internet literacy are two of the really major ones that I'm not sure having a separate app will 100% alleviate. If it's being able to be, you know, administered directly through the state and like your caseworker is, you know, saying, advertising it, you know, please use this. That might be a different story, but I'm not sure how effective a separate entity for this sort of thing will be, just because the people who are receiving these benefits may not want to have to, you know, learn a whole new system, considering this whole process is already pretty complicated.
Yeah, Russell, thanks. I think that's a fantastic suggestion. We'll see about how it can be executed. I know there are a number of conversations about how we're going to help those who are volunteering get and maintain records, because they're in a category that's even much more challenging than those who are getting a pay stub. So we're looking for all creativity to help us make this happen, and thanks for that suggestion. Thank you, Russell.
Senator, we're going to go live with Nakia. Nakia, you are live.
Hi, I wanted to know, well, I'm a full-time student and I get SNAP. Would that affect me where I have to do the 20 hours as well?
Full-time student. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, so if you were already able to receive benefits before while you were a full-time student, I'll say, you know, kudos to you. Because there are really a lot of unnecessary extra separate burdens placed on students getting benefits. So if you're already able to navigate that, that's great. I'll say these provisions that are newly implemented should not form a new hindrance for you to navigate. So if you're able to get on and keep your benefits beforehand, you should not experience any new difficulties with these changes.
Good, Nakia, you're good. Full-time students who are receiving SNAP are okay. Just got to make sure you demonstrate it. This stuff has got to be demonstrated. Thanks so much.
Senator, we're going to go live with Alita. Alita, you are live.
Hi, this is Alita from Philadelphia. I was calling to see, does this also apply to people who have SSI and I'll receive SNAP benefits? Or do I have to prove through medical records or have to go into my doctor's office and run around the whole city collecting information and sending it to the places it needs to go?
That's a good question. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah. If you are already receiving SNAP benefits, these new changes should not impact you. You're already receiving SNAP, you're already receiving SSI, then you should be good. You should still be exempt. If, however, you are looking to apply, you know, for the first time or again, or you're not currently receiving benefits and you plan to, these new changes shouldn't make the job any harder than it already is. That being said, it already is going to be a hard job. Getting SSI and being able to prove that you are receiving SSI is a great starting point in terms of proving to the agency that you have a disability and possibly should be exempt from these work requirements, but making sure you may have to do some, unfortunately, some running around town to grab the documents necessary to prove that you are getting that. I definitely don't think it would hurt to have your medical records ready, but again, that's if you are not currently receiving SNAP and are looking to apply. If you already have it, great. You should not be affected. You should not be worried about getting kicked off. That I just put out that warning in case you're not already receiving food assistance and are wondering about getting on.
That's good. So, Lita, you're good. You're good. You should not be affected because you are already receiving. All right, what's our next caller? We got a lot of callers in. Thank you so much, Karen.
Of course. Senator, we are going to go live with Shantae. Shantae, you are live.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My question was, since the federal government has issued the new mandate for 80 hours a month in order to remain compliant with SNAP benefits, have they also released a maximum income amount for those 80 hours in order to stay compliant, in order to participate in the SNAP program?
Income requirements. Thank you for limitations. What do we know about that, Kyle? That's a great question. Income requirements.
It is a great question. It's a question that has, I think, two broad answers. And I say that because there are national standards, and then, fortunately, states do have some flexibility within those standards to be a bit more lenient, a bit more generous. The national standards pretty much restrict access to SNAP food assistance to folks that are receiving or that have an income below 130% of the federal poverty line. That's going to vary based on your household size, so there's like no one number. It's based on how big your household is, how big your family is. But what basically that means, it's not a lot of money. It's not a lot before you become ineligible for SNAP. Fortunately, states have the option to be a bit more or a bit less restrictive, and that means increasing the income threshold that folks have to meet in order to qualify. There are some extra steps that the state agency would have to walk you through, essentially. Like, you're only eligible if you get, you know, if you talk to this person, get this resource, and it opens up, you know, a new pathway, and so and so. But it should be a pretty seamless process where, at the end, you are able to get SNAP benefits if you fall outside that 130% income threshold for federal poverty line, which is not enough. I'll flag that Pennsylvania in particular has increased that income limit from 130% to 200% of the federal poverty line. So still not, you know, a huge amount of money you have to work with, but it is providing some extra leniency if you have a job that's not the lowest of the low wages, but you're still really struggling, you still really need help paying your bills, there should still be some help for you, whereas the national standard does not provide that much generosity. So, short answer, 200% of the federal poverty line for Pennsylvania. That number varies by family size, is what you're looking at.
Thank you so much. And so that 200% hasn't changed. It was the same before. It was the same in January of 2025,
yep.
And it's the same in August 2025.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, those income rules haven't changed yet. Thanks so much, Shante. We're getting down to our last 10 minutes. Let's try to get a few more calls in before we do another summary.
Okay, our next caller is Ted. Ted, you are live.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Senator Haywood. How are you?
Good, Ted. Go ahead. Ted, go ahead.
Okay. It sounds like to me a lot of... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. It sounds like to me a lot of people are going to have to exit this program. That means there are going to be people without a food source. What is the backup plan? What happens to those folks who no longer are able to get or utilize SNAP?
So let me say a couple things about that, Ted. Number one, we understand that a lot of the folks receiving SNAP who are at least from the 19 to 55-year-olds are working. Quite a few people are actually working. They just got to fill out all these requirements, pay stubs, and what's been described. So that's number one. Number two, the charity network. What we have been told is that for every one meal from the charity network, SNAP provides 9. One meal charity network, 9 meals SNAP. So there is no program to come up with the 9 meals for those who SNAP is not available. So individuals who are going to be losing SNAP food assistance will not, they'll just have the charity network, which is not enough, and that's it. There's no other program that I'm aware of for individuals to receive this critical food assistance. Kyle, are you aware of some other program to provide the critical food assistance that folks are relying upon to eat?
Well, there are a variety, I'd say, of smaller government food assistance programs. A lot of them kind of centered for children specifically. Summer EBT, WIC, for instance. These are programs that are largely kind of aimed at children. There are other programs that are aimed at older Americans, seniors. But unfortunately, the reality is with a lot of these smaller programs, a lot of them still often rely on state funding. And the problem with that is that the new tax and spending law that just went into effect, cutting SNAP, does so partially by pushing a lot of federal costs onto states that they cannot afford to pay out. And the fear is that a lot of those smaller food assistance programs will also be kind of bearing the brunt of cuts as well in order to find ways to make state budgets work. What Senator Haywood was saying about the charity sector is definitely also concerning. That's what I would say is kind of the last bastion of food security there. It's just folks that are handing out food to their local communities through charity networks, through food pantries, through food banks. And what we've seen, unfortunately, really around the country is that food banks are basically screaming from the rooftops, from the mountaintops, like, we cannot take on the increased demand, the increased hunger that would result from cuts to SNAP, which is the largest food assistance program. I see there was a quote even from Pennsylvania's Westmoreland Food Bank that essentially said, we are not equipped to absorb the massive demand that would result from reduced access to federal nutrition programs. Food banks cannot replace the scale, the reach, and the stability of the SNAP program. This really comes into the context, which makes it even worse, which is earlier in the year, there was about $1 billion worth of cuts to food that was going to this charity sector. So they are essentially already saw a cut beforehand, and now they're going to be seeing longer lines, more people needing help because they no longer have their SNAP benefits. And the reality is the charities won't be able to keep up with the new demand. So you're going to start seeing, you know, longer lines at the food pantries and at the food banks and at the churches. And that's an expected result. Like, we know this is going to happen. Whenever there have been cuts to SNAP previously, demand has skyrocketed.
Thank you, Ted. This is basically cruelty. Cruelty by the government is well known what will happen. Folks will be without food. There's no mystery to that. Here in Philadelphia, Phil Abundance, it says they're already at their limit. They are already at their limit of providing food, and they can't do more. As Kyle said, Phil Abundance lost $1 million from the national government. They lost $1 million this year. So they're already tighter than normal and don't have the capacity to deal with what's coming. I think we're going to take one more call. I think we might be able to get one more call in, Taryn and Kyle. Let's try to get one more in. It's 6:57, and we'll wrap it up.
All righty. Our last caller will be Brenda. Brenda, you are live.
Oh. Hi. Of course, I'm in Philadelphia. I would like to know, are they going to provide some type of liaison that we, other people that we could talk to have more representation to help us before we fall into getting cut off or what have you?
That's a great question. Thank you, Brenda. And that's why we're having this call, to let people know that these work requirements begin August the 1st. And the county assistance office is going to start checking on whether people make the work requirements or not September the 1st. Your best contact is going to be the county assistance office. Their DHS will be in Compass. They will be sending out information to keep people informed. They have asked me to say, keep your address updated with the county assistance office and Compass, and make sure the post office has that same address. My office will do all we can to let people know what's happening, but in terms of liaison, someone you can talk to directly about your situation, that's going to be DHS and the county assistance office. Now, I got to wrap it up here. Kyle, I cannot thank you enough for being part of this great discussion and providing the responses that you did, and thank you for joining us this evening. I also want to thank all who participate in our telephone hall discussion tonight. That includes Brianna, Tanya, Gina, Loretta, Catherine, Barbara, Carolyn, Michelle, Tracy, Russell, Nakia, Alita, Shante, Ted, and finally Brenda. Thank you so much for asking these questions. Now, if you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. Thank you again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 215-242-8171 or simply visit my website at SenatorHayward.com. Kyle, Karen, and all the listeners and those who raised questions, thank you again, and good night.